As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jovan, boo-ha! Boo-ha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another live show. We have some breaking news. The Lakers have found their backup center. They signed Kevon Looney, formerly of the New Orleans Pelicans and Golden State Warriors, to a one-year, $3.9 million deal, which is a veteran minimum contract. I know some people are underwhelmed, and I get it. We will get into Looney's fit and the overall market, as well as strengths, weaknesses, and then what's next for the Lakers. But shout out to the chat. Shout out to the late night gang. So let's get into it. So the Lakers signed Kevon Looney to a vet minimum contract. He was on that short list with Andre Drummond and Jonas Valanciunas as the backup fives that were immediately floated after the DeAndre Ayton trade. And realistically, once the Lakers got off DeAndre Ayton, it was unlikely they were going to get a backup five on his level. It was even unrealistic, I would say, that they were going to get a backup five on like Jackson Hayes's level. So I think in general, it was going to be somewhat underwhelming whoever the Lakers ended up nabbing. Now, there maybe was an exception there with Musa Cisse, though he is a restricted free agent in Dallas. They lost Marvin Bagley, so one would assume they would prioritize keeping him at a reasonable deal. Outside of him, I mean, of course, if you could get Yves Misi or someone like that, that would be a clear upgrade over the market. But the market was pretty underwhelming. For those who watched my episode last night when I did the breakdown on how the Lakers could acquire that starting forward, I did have a slide with the centers available on the market, and it was Cisse, Nick Richards, Kevon Looney, and Jonas Valanciunas, depending on what happens with his situation in Denver. Pretty underwhelming. Not the sexiest group of names. And so I think naturally there's going to be a letdown with whoever the Lakers signed at this position. Now, as for Looney, I think it's about as realistically good as it gets based on the minimum market, which again is an incredibly low bar, pick it among those names. The Lakers did prefer Andre Drummond before he ended up signing with the Knicks. That's why he was on that short list. He was clearly the best backup center available at the time, but he ended up going to New York to play that Mitchell Robinson role, which we know is a pretty important role there. And I think probably more important, probably a more prominent role than what the Lakers could offer him based on, you know, their addition of Kessler. I would have preferred Musa Cisse or Nick Richards compared to Kevon Looney, just based on those guys, their athleticism, the lob threat ability with both those guys. Kevon Looney is a ground-bound big man. I have a fun or not so fun stat to share in a moment when we get into his fit and his strengths and weaknesses. So I think Cisse and Richards would have been closer to that Jackson Hayes backup role where it's just the lob threat that comes in off the bench. Like, you could even argue while Walker Kessler is a legitimate lob threat, a lot of that has to do with his size and his length rather than his vertical pop, right? Like, Walker Kessler is not this above the rim force necessarily, more so on the defensive end than the offensive end, outside of maybe his offensive rebounding. But a lot of that has to do with just how massive Walker Kessler is. And he's a mammoth out there, so he can play above the rim, catch lobs and whatnot, but he's not this pogo stick athlete that a guy like Cisse or Richards more checks that box. So I would have liked to have seen that look in the front court. Like, one thing we talked about on Lakers Collective and one thing I was just on with Anthony Irwin, it's like the Lakers front court has lost some athleticism. The back court has gained athleticism. So if you look at going from Smart and Kennard to Grimes and Sexton, clearly an upgrade. You could also throw in Cameron Carr as a backcourt player. Like, the backcourt is upgraded in that specific sense of athleticism, speed, guys that could potentially hang with OKC and San Antonio. The front court, though, has lost some real athleticism, losing LeBron and Jackson Hayes and even Rui comparatively to Kessler and Mamu. And right now there's, I guess, you know, you throw in Looney now, but it's Jake LaRavia. It's just like not that athletic of a front court. Luka, you could throw in there as a front court player defensively, at least. It's a pretty below average to even like bottom of, you know, bottom third of the league in terms of athleticism, that front court group. So that's where if they add the Jonathan Kuminga, if they add the Derrick Jones Jr., if they add one of those hyper athletic forwards slash wings, like that would really help with LA's overall front court athleticism. So let's get into Kevon Looney. So 6'9", 222 pounds, though I feel like just looking at his frame and the way that he plays far closer to a guy who's like 250 pounds rather than a guy who's 222. I don't know, like I just don't believe that number, but that's what he's listed as. This is going to be his 12th season. He's 30 years old, out of UCLA, played in Golden State for 10 of his 11 seasons, won three championships there. So was a part of 17, 18, and 2022. So has the pedigree, has been a starter on a championship team, played prominent minutes and roles on championship teams, deep playoff teams, obviously went to the finals as well in 2019. So he is as battle-tested and experienced as it realistically gets among the current options. So that is an element here of veteran leadership and just experience is something that the Lakers are lacking throughout their overall roster and rotation. He now is the first Laker to be 30 years or older on the team. Austin gets replaced as the unk on the team. It had been Austin as the elder statesman. Now it's Kevon Looney at age 30. It feels like he's like 34, but he's younger than you think. In terms of strengths with Looney's game, he remains a premier dirty work big. So what I mean by that is when you think of Kevon Looney, you think of motor, you think of physicality, you think of toughness, and you think of basketball IQ. He excels in all of those facets. He plays extremely hard. He's extremely physical, again, playing bigger than his size. He plays like a guy who's 7 foot 250, might not be able to like move that quickly or jump that high, but he's an imposing physical presence. And there's a toughness and IQ that comes with him that, I mean, to fit in the Golden State system for as long as he did, like you have to have a certain basketball IQ, a certain level of processing to land or, you know, to stick in Golden State for as long as he did and to play at the highest level on the biggest stage with Golden State the way that he did. So I think that's something that is promising. In terms of the specifics within his game, he is an elite screen setter. He's going to set bone-crushing screens. That's still one of his strengths at this point of his game. He's an elite rebounder on both sides of the ball, 93rd plus percentile offensive and defensive rebounder. So that's, I would say that's the biggest strength of his overall, is like he's an elite rebounder on both sides of the ball still. And he's going to protect the paint. He rates out as about like a B minus. And granted, that's in more of like a backup role, but like a B minus backup defender. So, you know, solid for a backup big, not an elite backup defensively, but also not this massive liability. Like he's somewhere in the middle and probably trending more toward being, I would say, a net positive on the defensive side. I would say the core of his game and like the most fundamental level is he plays hard, he's physical, he's tough, he's smart. So he's bringing that to the table, and that's going to play out with good screening, good rebounding on both sides of the ball, and decent rim protection in a backup context. He's an underrated passer. I think that's one of the most underrated elements of his game, and that was something that he refined in Golden State as he was figuring out just with DHOs and some of the high-low passing. Like I think he could do a little bit more than the typical big with his profile. And he's even shown a little bit of a jumper. He's had stretches and seasons where he shot threes and shot them better. This past season, didn't shoot well from deep, shot 15% on threes, but two seasons ago, shot 40%. And then earlier in his career in Golden State was shooting in like the low 20s. So I would say he's an inconsistent three-point shooter. He's not, like, teams will not guard him out there. Teams will let him shoot threes as frequently as he wants, but he has shown a little bit of can maybe pop or trail into a wide open jumper, whether that's like a mid-range jumper or a three. Not a strength of his game, a very low volume component of his game, but it is something that potentially the Lakers could try to unlock depending on how they want to use him. And I think, again, to kind of hit on like the veteran, like the pedigree with the championships playing in Golden State, the IQ, the way he approaches the game, I do think he's a great locker room fit. I think he's a great culture guy. And to me, that is something that the Lakers, I think they needed a more veteran player on the roster. Now, is he capable of playing a full-time backup role on a team with championship aspirations, on a team that is fighting for home court in the West? I think that's TBD.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And that will bring us now to the weaknesses. Weaknesses with Kevon Looney. Incredibly limited finisher. If you look at his finishing, his finishing at the rim has been trending downward for multiple years in a row. For some perspective here, from starting in 2023, he shot 73% at the rim, which is a solid percentage. It's a good percentage. Since then, it's been trending downward from 73 to 68 to 67 to 62.5. 62.5 for a big man who's primarily paint bound and either getting putbacks or catching and finishing is pretty bad. That is pretty bad for a center. The fun stat, or not so fun stat, that I teased a little bit earlier, Kevon Looney had one dunk this past season in 21 games. So he is as ground bound as it gets. He is not a lob threat. He is not even really a threat for like a dump off pass into a dunk. He is barely jumping and often using his center of gravity, his strength, his base to clear guys out for offensive rebounds, Gortat screen, stuff like that. He is not this aerial threat of you're going to get him with the head of steam in the pick and roll, hit him for a lob. Now, earlier in his career, he's been more of a lob threat. You look at 2019, when he was 22 years old, he had 105 dunks in 80 games. Going a little bit more recently, 2023, he had 68 dunks, 2022, 83. But the last 3 years, he has fewer than 50 dunks combined over the past three seasons. And this past season, he only played 21 games, but the two prior seasons, he played 76 and 74 games respectively. So looking at a sample size of nearly 170 games and him having fewer than 50 dunks. So he's like dunking once every three games, roughly. So this is not DeAndre Ayton or Jackson Hayes or Walker Kessler or Nick Richards or Musa Cisse. This is a guy who is not an aerial threat whatsoever. So that's something that you have to factor in here of like, I think of the guys the Lakers were looking at offensively, he's easily the worst finisher and the most limited. So Jonas Valanciunas is still in the NBA because of his post game, because he still can catch in the short roll, hit those little floaters, little jumpers, and he's a high-level rebounder. Cisse and Richards have that aerial ability, can catch dunks and be a lob threat and be a finishing threat at the rim. That's not Kevon Looney's game. His game is all the other stuff with the screening, rebounding, and defense, which is useful, but it felt like the Lakers were trying to build this rotation here where it was all offensive pluses and guys who, with the exception of Kessler, could do multiple things offensively. That's not Kevon Looney. Kevon Looney is a clear minus. You know, I would say like he's closer to, he's closer to being Vando offensively than he is to being like Jackson offensively. So like that's kind of the spectrum he's at here in terms of like a very limited offensive player, at least from like a scoring offensive output perspective, where you really have to, I think, you know, gift wrap him, hand him like wide open attempts or putbacks. Like putbacks are the strength. Like that's a primary way he's scoring, is he's great at clearing space and tapping balls in. You're either corralling the ball, going back up for a layup, or tapping the ball in off the backboard or over the rim. Like that's the primary way he scores at this stage of his career. A couple other notes with his efficiency was his true shooting percentage of 45%, which is like mind-bogglingly poor, was third percentile this past year. So we're talking one of the worst offensive players overall, factoring in field goal percentage, free throw percentage, and you're also weighing in two-point percentage, three-point percentage. Effective field goal percentage was fourth percentile. So again, we're talking about like a bottom 5% scorer from an efficiency perspective this past season. Allowed 78.8% at the rim. So he grades out. He doesn't grade out well in defensive estimated plus minus, but he does grade out well in D LeBron and some of the rim protection numbers on B-Bell Index. But even with that, 80% at the rim is, I mean, that makes DeAndre Ayton look like Victor Wembanyama for some perspective. Like, I mean, granted, it was a relatively small sample size. He only played in 21 games. He was playing in New Orleans. It's not the best encapsulation of his game. And again, there's some grades where he grades out as like a B plus rim protector, but allowing 78.8% at the rim is pretty concerning. And so to kind of wrap with Looney, I think based on the constraints of the market and what the Lakers are trying to do right now, if you had to settle for a vet minimum center and we're not going to trade for one, or we're not going to do some broader trade where maybe you're trading for Kuminga and you're bringing a center out of that, or you're trading for PJ Washington, bringing a center out of that, you're trading with the Clippers, getting DJJ, bringing a center out of that. If you weren't going to do something like that, this was about as good as it gets. Like, again, I would have preferred Cisse, but he was a restricted free agent, so there's a limitation there. I also would have preferred Nick Richards, but I think Nick Richards is a little overrated, so I don't know how much that really moves the needle. And I would say Looney's a better rebounder, he's a better screen setter, and he's probably a better defender overall than Nick Richards. So you get like the offensive upgrade, you get the rim threat, lob threat ability with Richards, the athleticism, but Looney does do some things that at a higher level than Richards that are important. So in summation, I think it's an underwhelming move, but within the context of everything, it's fine. It's again, we're quibbling here, like Kevon Looney versus Nick Richards. I get why people want Nick Richards. I also wanted Nick Richards more, but the reality of the situation was the Lakers were going to downgrade from DA or Jackson realistically. This is a downgrade, but he does do some things better. Like, he's a better screen setter than both Ayton and Jackson. He's a better rebounder than both Ayton and Jackson. And defensively, I would say he's in a similar ball, like doesn't have the mobility of either one of those guys, but might actually be just a straight up better rim protector than either one of those guys. I think it's relatively close in terms of overall defensive impact, but it's obviously a backup big to Walker Kessler. What I will note though, in closing here, is I do not think Kevon Looney is a rotation player against Oklahoma City or San Antonio or New York at the highest levels. So Lakers get to round two, Lakers get to round three, Lakers get to the finals, and they're playing one of those three teams. I do not think he's a player who can play in that type of series. Maybe against New York in like the Drummond minutes, although I think Drummond's just a better player and is also a stronger player and a better rebounder than Looney. But okay, like, can he maybe play against Cornette? Maybe. I do think Cornette's a much better player than Looney for like some perspective on where Looney's at in that pecking order. I don't think he could play against Isaiah Hartenstein, Chet Holmgren, or Jalen Williams. And we'll see with Ade Mara as well. So I think he's fine as an innings eater in like a 12 to 15 minute a night, maybe 18 minutes at most during the regular season. I have some real skepticism of him in a playoff context against the best teams in the league. I don't think he's got the skill, the finishing, or just the overall like defensive impact to play in those matchups. And so I think the risk that the Lakers are running here is if Walker Kessler goes down for any period of time, and it could even be like a 2 week period, but 2 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, I think the Lakers are in a real bind there at the center spot where I guess you go Mamu and really lean into Mamu, but your rim protection between Mamu and Kevon Looney is concerning. And that's a real drop off from Kessler, but I would say it's also a drop off from Ayton and Jackson combined when looking at like last year's group. So the Lakers like bet on Walker Kessler continues to rise in terms of like the stakes of it, where not only are they betting on Walker Kessler to like stay healthy and provide a certain amount of value on that contract, but But if Walker Kessler goes down with the current iteration of this roster, I just think the Lakers are frankly screwed. And will like this is not DA misses a few games and Jackson can step in and basically replicate him. Like the gap between Kessler and Looney is enormous. And now Looney can replicate some things with the screening, the rebounding, maybe the defense in a pinch, although he's nowhere near the same level of rim protector or anchor, but he's not the level of finisher. He's not going to be giving you double-digit scoring nights. Like he is, at least this past season, was one of the most limited offensive players, just period. Like one of the, like a bigger, like you know, I mentioned he's closer to Vando than Jackson. Like Vando was a better offensive player than him last year. So, you know, for some perspective here, like it's pretty limited. So I just wanted to break down his game, go through it. Like again, overall, based on the minimum market, who is out there, it's difficult to say other than maybe Nick Richards, the Lakers were going to find a better player. I do think he helps as a locker room presence. I think he helps with some playoff experience in the pedigree, the toughness, the motor, the physicality. Like he's going to do some things. And the Lakers are now really prioritizing offensive rebounding between Kessler and Looney. That's going to be a real asset for them. I think they're going to go from one of the worst offensive rebounding teams in the league to one of the best. And that is encouraging, especially if you add the Kuminga or Washington, who can also provide some offensive rebounding, some athleticism. DJJ also fits that. Like you get one of those guys and all of a sudden you have changed your makeup where probably a higher volume three-point shooting team and a higher volume offensive rebounding team. And that does shift some of the margins in your favor. So I see the upside with this move. I would say it's overall limited upside and pretty limited to the context of he's a regular season backup who I have real concerns with scaling into a playoff setting and I don't think can play at the highest levels. So I think this will be something that's on the Lakers' radar in terms of do they add a third center? Do they add the Nick Richards? Do they add someone during the course of the season? Do they make a move at the deadline? Because I think if it's just Kessler and Looney, it's really just Kessler in terms of a playoff context. And that is something that the Lakers, like we've seen it before. I mean, Kessler is such an upgrade over Ayton and Jackson that it's better than the alternatives or better than the predecessors. But I would like the Lakers to have two playable centers in the playoffs. And as of, again, maybe you just shift to Mamu as the backup five and you go with that. But I think the Lakers are looking at him as a 4-5 hybrid right now and trying to play him in double big looks. So again, maybe Mamu ends up being the guy, but I would like a third, more playable option if possible, but LA is also trying to find that starting forward spot so that they have some limitations there. But with all that said, appreciate you guys for rocking with me. I'll be back tomorrow. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. The numbers have been off the charts the last couple of weeks. I really appreciate the new audience. It would mean a ton to me if you considered hitting that subscribe button and trying to get to 40,000 subscribers by the end of the month. It would mean the world if you considered hitting subscribe. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review, and talk to you all very soon.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.